Welcome to Editing Loud, and as usual, we have a panel of South Africa's top journalists ready to tell us all about what's been going on and why it's important. Guys, can we start with the crime stats that came out this week? It's been all over the news. There's been the police minister talking about how we're now in a war zone. Ron, can I ask you, I mean, the figures seem pretty appalling, but for context, are these figures worse than before? I mean, why is it now we're suddenly panicking about crime stats as opposed to, say, 5 years ago?
I think it's because there's a new minister. I think he's playing it out clear, and I think perhaps this is him. Okay, this is the base he's going to work from. I think, I mean, we know that the truth about our crime in South Africa is pretty high, but I think this is Biggie clearly saying, okay, this is my base, and I think in his base going forward, that's what he has. We'll mark him against his benchmark, I think. And then, I mean, in later years, if he continues as police minister, I promise you, you won't be seeing as clear detail as we saw yesterday, which was kind of depressing. But I think for me, it's just him. Benchmark, this is how bad we are. And hopefully, well, maybe he thinks he'll clean it up. And if he doesn't, I don't think we'll see as glaring as an omission. I mean, basically, it means we've given up. We've lost the fight against crime. And yesterday was him just saying, it's a war zone. I promise you, in years to come, you won't see a police minister being as frank as that. It's just, it's an opening self.
So Ray Hartley, I mean, this Ron says that it's mostly politics involved in this current assessment. Surely this is something that should transcend politics in some ways. I mean, 57 people are killed every day, sexual assaults are through the roof. I mean, surely it's beyond a situation where it's just about playing politics.
Yeah, and I think part of the crime problem in South Africa is that it is a consequence of politics. Because the way in which for decades under President Zuma, the top structures of the investigations units and the prosecution authorities were messed with, and these institutions became much weaker and became much less of a bulwark against crime. But these crime stats, I mean, you know, to sort of put it in perspective, over the last 10 years, more people have died, been murdered in South Africa than died in the Afghanistan war or in the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. I mean, it's horrific. Mm. It's more than, you know, it's two full FNB stadiums of people, 175,000 people. And so it's got to a big crisis point. I mean, the question is, can Biggie Gcwele turn it around? Or is he going to also fall victim to playing a bunch of political games and putting people in positions to make political points, score political points against opponents?
So that is the interesting point, is can you turn it around, and why can't we get a handle on it? I mean, Lakanya, do you have any ideas why we can't seem to get a handle on the crime rates at all?
I mean,
I don't think we spend below what we should for policing to some extent, although the minister said we did. But I mean, I don't know if it's a capacity issue or why we can't seem to nail it.
I mean, this is like not an overnight problem, obviously. I mean, we've been talking about crime in this country for decades. You know, when, remember, like in the 90s, people always talk about the chicken runs. And
the criminals were in the union buildings
for
a long time.
You know? I mean, so I'm not sure, really. Like, I mean, is it a policing issue? Is it a bigger societal issue? Like, and I mean, if it's a bigger societal issue, I don't think it's anything like you can just flip a coin and think any minister will fix. So, I mean, if you look where the crimes are happening, where the structures, where these places are, the levels of poverty, the levels of lawlessness. And so I'm not sure, like, how much of a police budget over 10 years or 5 years can do. I mean, I think we need to maybe discuss this at a much deeper level rather than a question of whether or not we've got 10 or 20 cops at any one day.
Mm. Well, there's always been that response of hiring more policemen, so put more muscle on the ground. But clearly, and this has been a policy response since over 20 years, there's more policemen, it's been the call, right? So clearly, that's not working. Putting more muscle on the street is not working. So this is where it comes back to what Ray was saying, the intelligence gathering. That's where the focus should be. Instead of just hiring more muscle, basically more security guards and putting them on the street with guns and deal with crime. They're not dealing with crime, clearly. It's obvious to everyone.
Yeah, I think
so maybe the size of the police force is not the issue. Yeah. It's more about the intelligence, what's going into the actual intelligence.
But I think, I mean, Sekanati, what Ron has just said is accurate. I mean, if we basically, it's like our teaching scenario. We spend a lot on education, but we spend it really badly. So that's exactly what's happening. We're not spending the right amount, not getting bang for our buck in our spending. Is that part of the issue in terms of nailing this down? Is that we might spend money, but it's useless money. We're not doing it properly.
Mm-hmm. We are absolutely doing a very bad job of it. The whole thing is accountability. Have you ever heard of a policeman or a teacher or even a civil servant getting fired for not doing their job. Instead, they get promotions. And it starts right at the top, and it's a function of society. It's what we are. And of course, what do? We keep voting for the same people. We keep putting the same officers. We keep doing everything the same, and yet expecting a different outcome. 20,336 murders in 1 year versus, for example, 700 murders in the UK a year. That's a war zone. There seems to be nobody interested in trying to solve the problem. I don't see anyone trying to solve the problem, and that's our biggest problem. No one will be held accountable. We have been carrying on exactly as we have for the past 25 years, and apartheid was no better. It's just the same thing. Politicians get in there and pose. We had a minister called Fikile Mbalula. The best he ever did was pose for photos on Twitter, and he was fighting crime. Like that, there's just more effort.
You know, I think that you know, there are also things that can be done that are not done. So you know, part of this is about a mindset and about how people view crime. And at the moment, they view crime as something you can get away with. So if you have very high-profile crimes that are filmed and broadcast on national television, like for example, people streaming into somebody's shop and taking all their goods and rushing out into the street, and it's filmed and photographed and published everywhere, and nobody is brought to book. The signal is very clear.
Yeah.
This is permissible. So, you know, starting with that kind of, like the looting that happened at these shops in Soweto, go there, find those people, arrest them, and prosecute them.
And get rid of dodgy cops. Yeah. But Lakanya, I just want to ask, to what extent should business worry about this kind of issue? I mean, obviously we have things like cash and transit heists, we have business robberies that are still looking terrible, but to what extent is this an investment issue that would deter people from investing in this country?
I mean, actually, like a few weeks ago, I had a chat with an ambassador from a high commissioner from one of those other countries from Asia. Then he says to me, like, you know, like some of my business people like are interested to come to Joburg, but sometimes I worry about sending them. I don't know whether they'll get to their hotel. I mean, so people actually are worried that when they do bring people over for like some kind of business meetings, they might not even make it to their hotel because they might have syndicates hijacking them on the way to the airport. So it's not something that's like out there pie in the sky. It definitely is an issue, and it's an issue of confidence as well. Like, I mean, if you think the place headlines or war zones, would you want to go to invest in a war zone when you can invest somewhere else where you can actually import workers, where you can build things, and you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and have a growth rate beyond 1%.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you say you're MTN or whatever, you're trying to import the highest skilled engineers from Asia or the UK or whatever, and they can either come to a war zone or they can go to Berlin. Where do you think they would go?
But this is also like when it's about culture, right? I mean, a large percentage of the murders are domestic abuse, right? Husbands killing their wives and girlfriends and so on. So that's also another societal stuff. Maybe that much deeper. The fact that we kill our wives and our girlfriends, right? There must be a deeper issue with us as men, migration. I don't know what it is, but in dealing with urbanization, I don't think South Africa has got on the levels of urbanization within the big cities. Do we know how people are flooding in every day? Deep Sloot's getting bigger, or do we have enough police stations in Deep Sloot to manage them? So there's no grand plan beyond just the policing. Something like muscle is great, right? If we throw as many police officers, but if we're not actually looking at the growth of our townships or of places like Deep Sloot and so on, and are we policing those areas well enough? And then of course there's a domestic issue. I think we all need to go get some therapy from our partner. Maybe but there's something amiss with men in South Africa in particular as well.
Can I talk about another specific kind of crime just in a couple of minutes before the break? State capture, we've heard about it over the last couple of months. Bain Capital, for example, has now said that they're going to repay the money back. I mean, Sikonathi, can you just explain to us what they said and why it's important?
So that's the 164 million rand that they took from SARS for whatever advice they gave to SARS. Then they issued a statement and said, oh, well, we don't want to benefit from this kind of work because our assignment was abused there for other purposes. So we'll pay back the money plus VAT. And they changed the... And then following day, they said the managing director is stepping down and they changed their statement again and said, he's actually not leaving, he remains a partner. And so we checked with them, why are you paying back the VAT? Does that mean you kept it? You had kept it in the first place. Oh, we'll change that statement too. We're paying back the interest, not the
VAT. So they charged SARS VAT. They charged the tax authority VAT.
Yeah, and
to do work for them that destroyed SARS.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the fantastic irony of that.
And this is another form of crime indeed. I have said before in my columns that the best place to do crime is in South Africa. The crime stats show, but also white-collar crime. We have the people at Bain and McKinsey walking around like the best people in the world because this is the best environment to do crime, white-collar crime.
So Lucanio, I mean, in terms of repaying the money, has Bain done enough? It seems like there's been a lot of criticism of the various companies for their responses to state capture, the ones who've been involved, like McKinsey and Bain. I mean, what should they have done?
I mean, I think like at the beginning of this, before all the revelations, there was a sense that Bain had behaved at least better than, say, McKinsey. And then there was, I mean, I think there was some kind of sympathy that maybe they'd found themselves used or as they would. But then other things have come up since then, the meetings that had with Moyane and Zuma before Moyane was even appointed. I mean, that's what I found quite shocking, that you, I, other voters, taxpayers in the country had no idea that Moyane was going to be the commissioner, and yet people from Bain knew, and they were actually they were actually like giving presentations to him. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest scandals of this, let alone the money thing. That's just purely as a democratic sovereign nation. I don't know how we could actually tolerate that, to start with. But I didn't really answer your question about the money. The money is almost like secondary in this case, isn't it? I mean, I think
it's just the principle, and they could never pay enough. They've cost us over 100 billion rand. That's just the start. And this
is that lost taxpayer revenue?
Yeah, that's lost revenue that could not be collected by SARS. This year, it's expected SARS will collect 40% less than they should. Who do we have to thank? Bain. And what do? They give us
the bane of SARS existence. Sorry, Ray, you were going to?
I think the problem is that they were fixing something that wasn't broken. You know, SARS was known to be a functional, successful government department, one of the best, that saved South Africa over decades by continuously improving revenue collection, which enabled government to go ahead with the social welfare programs and a whole lot of other spending that otherwise might not have happened. And this was obviously a functional, successful organization. Why did it have to be turned on its head? Didn't they ask that question?
And we'll try and answer that question after the ad break. And we'll also talk about the plot to unseat Cyril Ramaphosa. Join us after the ad break. Welcome back to Editing Loud. And guys, one of the big things that happened this week is it was headlines all over the place that Jacob Zuma and various other members of the disaffected were meeting in KZN, supposedly to unseat Cyril Ramaphosa. I suppose, Ray, I mean, how true do you think this is?
Well, you know, the thing is that there was a picture of the, of Jacob Zuma and Supra Mahomapela and Esma Khashule and others in the foyer of this hotel. Zuma was clutching a big sheaf of files. Mahomapela was looking at his phone. Supra was, you know, but there they were together, and the Sunday Times ran the story that they'd had a meeting. And this was vehemently denied, but in a very strange way.
Denied by people who were in the meeting,
yes,
denying that they were there. I mean, that's what I find staggering. The ANC Women's League Secretary General claimed that she wasn't.
They all happened to be sort of, they bumped into each other in the foyer.
One guy was even driving past.
And then some very conspiratorial person took a cell phone picture of them. But, they just happened to, this is a hotel where, if you go to Durban, you got to go there. It's got a fantastic buffet. Where else would you go? And you're going to bump into people. But it is very, very alarming that the deposed Premier of the Northwest and the ANC Secretary General and the deposed President of the ANC were in the same room on not official party business. What were they doing?
I suppose, as Mandy Rice Davies would have said, they would deny it, wouldn't they? I mean, that's pretty much, they have denied it, Ron. I mean, they have denied it.
Yeah, of course they would. When they were caught, I mean, there's nothing to The fact that Magashule said yesterday he's going to talk organizational matters with the former president of the ANC, what role does he have to play with organizational matters?
He did such a great job.
He didn't use that word, former.
Oh yes, he didn't. He left out the president.
He couldn't bring himself to call him a former president.
But maybe he thought it was America, because America is a standard. You just call president.
But like, you know, in December, we knew Ramaphosa's win was so marginal that this type of thing, we knew was there. And I thought Ramaphosa has to somehow, maybe by exposing Magashule to some way, but he has to get rid of people like Magashule. We knew from day one, when he was SG, he has a problem, he has a mole within. And so this is Magashule exposed and trying to roll back, but it's clear.
Coalition of the compromise.
We've heard stories that Magashule and Ramaphosa don't meet at all. Magashule can't get an audience with the president, so this tells you that, okay, he's falling back on his old guy, and he's got to try and...
Got to have an audience with a former president.
A former president.
But Lukhanyo, I mean, why should we care about this matter? I mean, why is it important? Is it just a salacious story in the front of the Sunday Times that, you know, we see a picture, but we don't know necessarily, we don't have, you know, transcripts of what was said in the meeting? Why should we care about this? Why would it be important?
I suppose that obviously that the story is important in itself, all the intrigue and everything. But also, but on the other hand, we also remember, like, Ramaphosa was elected, and we had this whole period of Ramaphoria, this whole idea that there's going to be a new dawn, we're going to clean up the parastatals, we're going to get the economy going, we're going to deregulate everything, we're going to cut the cost of data. So all these beautiful things that we were supposed to do to get this economy going. I mean, that's a big picture here. We've got an economy that's like shrinking, massive levels of poverty, 30% unemployment. We just spoke about the crime. So from a business and investment perspective, if Ramaphosa is so compromised and is so weak and he's got no control of his own party, there's no way he can achieve even half of the things that we've just mentioned that we say need to be done and that he's pledged to do. Cleaning up SARS, cleaning up NPA, whatever. I mean, it's had progress in fairness. But when you think of all the challenges, they're hard enough when you're in control. You know, I mean, when you're not in control, how can you, as an investor, think he's going to do any of those things?
Sikonadi, I spoke to a few people who were saying that they feel that one way in which such a plot could play out, if it was indeed true, is essentially through just stymieing everything, just making the country ungovernable, making sure nothing happens, like Lukhanyo was saying. Do you think that would be the way in which you could seek to undermine the current president and for such a group of a coalition of the wounded to succeed in the longer term?
The Secretary General of the ANC and Jacob Zuma and them can't really make the country ungovernable, but they can render the party ungovernable. And I'm not aware of any Secretary General in the history of the African National Congress, a sitting Secretary General, that has ever lost a battle, because that's where the engine is, that you control. You've got that seat, you control the party. You basically can even decide who is a member in good standing, and that is the danger to Cyril Ramaphosa. They can call, for example, if the Sunday Times is to be believed, and which I do, well, if I had to choose between the Sunday Times and Magashule, there's not much of a choice to be made. They can call a general conference, for example, of the ANC to make a decision about Ramaphosa. And who does that? It's the Secretary General of the ANC. And that is the danger.
So to move on to something that's aligned to that, you know, we had the news last week that there's a recession now, that we're basically slipping backwards. Ron, in terms of how that plays into this, Ramaphosa, just looking at it politically first, is looking weak. Mm. I mean, the Ramaphoria hasn't delivered. We're slipping backwards. There have been noticeable policy confusion around land. I mean, how did you see the recession in terms of the trajectory that Ramaphosa was trying to portray?
I think that the recession was, I think we were going to hit that the recession mark. And actually, I was writing about it for the past maybe 5-6 years we've been in this recessionary phase. We just haven't had the textbook definition, right, of a recession. We've been lucky in that sense that that name hasn't been pegged on us, but we have been in recessionary time. So I don't think there was anything he could have done to let us escape it, but in terms of just confidence, right, this is what Ramaphosa is about. And you know, maybe... I'm always trying to look at the glass half full thing and saying...
This, and you're a journalist.
Huh? Yeah, I'm trying, you know, because I can't keep my head there. If I keep my head there, geez, in this country, I've been long, anyway, in long depression. But this whole Magashule plotting and scheming is just not telling you that. Maybe the positive about it is that it shows that clearly there's a faction within the ANC that's losing, and they're losing a grip on all. And this is the leaks and so on. But these are leaks, but coming out to show that this is... I mean, the losing faction, and it's falling away and falling outside of Ramaphosa. What he needs to do is just get a rein over his SG, and almost on evidence basis, this is evidence, right? Within the next, can you imagine the next NWC and NEC, we're discussing the performance of SG and how he'd have to perform now when all eyes are on him. So I think this, it might weaken Magashule more than anything else. He's exposed at the next NEC with his president there in the top six. So this might be, so in that regard, we knew this was coming. The recession, I think there was no way we could avoid a recession. Globally, the situation is what it is, and South Africa in terms of confidence levels is where it is. So. Now, Ramaphosa's thing is, we can only judge him economically next year, right? When he takes the full weight of the country.
Too late, right?
Yeah, it's too late.
The recession has happened.
But the recession is unavoidable. Like, there's nothing.
What happens next?
There was no politics that would have taken us out of that recession. There was no political change that would have, like, okay, we're out of recession. There was not. It was just confidence, okay, we're feeling better about Zuma's gone. But there was no politics that would have changed the fact that we were in a recession. I don't think politics alone would have pulled us out of
recession. I have to say, I agree with Ron there. I think he's also been reading the Financial Mail. Very good story in the Financial Mail where you talk about the structural issues. And this is like, I think the term your reporter used there was that like Zuma's chickens are coming home to roost. So this is not really about anything that was done in the last 6 months. I think maybe what you'd worry more about is going forward.
Yeah.
But you say that, but then at the same time, one of the key factors in the low growth numbers was agriculture. I think it was down 29%. And there were headlines in the report last week saying that the sales value of property has dropped by 32% from December to March. So it does indicate a certain crisis of confidence in the agricultural sector. Production's also down. Is that not a contemporary issue in terms of the confusion over the land policy?
I think that could be an issue going forward. And also, and I was only quoting your own newspaper, by the way, saying, like, let's look back 10 years, not 6 months. And I mean, I don't think anybody disagrees that him getting involved in that whole land constitutional thing has led to a lot of, like,
but there was drought over the past uncertainty. Land prices.
And it's gotten, like I said, it's put a lot of doubt about his ability to actually carry his party with him as opposed to being carried by his party, which we know from what Sekonate said is very highly compromised. So if he can't get a grip on them, then it's hard to see how he can get a grip on other things, and maybe we'll see more populist measures like this that are totally unnecessary. I mean, that's one of the most things when I look back at a statement he made on July 31st. He actually said there's no need to change the constitution, and then he said, oh, but we are going to do it anyway.
So Ray, in terms of, I mean, does it feel, do you think, like on the ground that there is a recession? I mean, it does feel that there is definitely a sense that there are more people out of work. You know, it aligns with the crime stats. It's kind of a negative, gloomy picture. How do we, as Sekonate said, how do we improve, how do we get out of that? How do we reverse that scenario? Just fix the country.
Well, I think that this phrase, structural change, has been around now since 1994 and before. The South African economy actually needs to undergo a structural change to make it more, to modernize it, to loosen the hold of the giant corporations that dominate sectors, free up entrepreneurial participation in the economy, and all of these things need to happen. But that's a longer term thing. It's not something that you could do now and then next quarter the results will come in and we'll be out of the recession. That's a much longer term thing. I think what needs to be done now is inspire confidence by having clear policies, not saying one thing to one audience and another thing to another and, you know, muddling along. I think having clear policies, having a clear, showing some control and of the party, of the state, actually getting ministers to do these things, these easy wins, cutting data prices. You know, that's something that doesn't require, you know, you don't need to consult people at the Maharani in Durban before you do that. You can just do that.
Well, it depends what's in those textbooks that he was holding. Yeah.
So, you know, those quick wins, I don't see them happening for some reason. You know, it seems to all be very slow.
But Sekonate, the structural issues that Ray refers to, I mean, to some extent, we are trapped in a situation where we have a declining mining industry that's basically the gold mining industry is dying. We have a lot of people out of work already. We have unemployment at 37%. That kind of scenario implies that there'll be more job losses, that you've got to change the way you think. I mean, can this country sustain more job losses as it transforms to a more, fourth industrial revolution country? I don't know if that's entirely possible without bloodshed.
You probably have to think about Zimbabwe. 80% unemployment rate and wonder if we can sustain that. Mm. But the best time to be for Ramaphosa to take leadership is now, 6 months before an election. The party has to follow him, lay down the law, lay down the policy, and let them follow. No political party wants to get rid of their leader 6 months before an election. So the confidence boosting measures that that Ray was talking about start, even if they are symbolical. We're selling 40% of SAA right now, and you follow. You need to start there. They have been talking about a rescue package and government's response to a recession, except not once. We discussed last week here and asked, what is this plan that they are talking about? You will never hear the plan, and that's not the way to lead. He needs to start taking leadership and do it now. Just lay down the law. Guys, this is how we're fixing it, and stop consulting.
Look, Kanya, just the last word from you on that. I mean, does he have the power to do that? Can he do that? No. And should he? How should he do that?
I know. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? And I was thinking as you were talking that we haven't even discussed ESCOM. You can imagine. That's one of the biggest ones. That.
How do we have a program with Sikonati and not discuss
ESCOM? And it's probably one the biggest danger to our whole society. And it's gone to the point where we keep kicking it down the road, to the point where we even get bored with it. So we don't even mention it. You know, and... I mean, it's hard to see, like, how... not to get depressed when you talk about ESCOM. I suppose maybe that's why we avoid ESCOM. because that one, we seem to have, like, had a little bit of a talk about it, and had a new energy policy that's very vague here and there, and then totally, like, forgotten about it. But once until we fix that one, I don't think there's any point even discussing anything else, and I can't really see any prospects about fixing that one.
Okay, so that's the show for today, guys. The task for next week is fix ESCOM and we'll fix the country. Thanks for joining us. Join us next week where we'll debate the big issues of the week.